everyone. This is Lynn Marie Norris with Radioactive Magazine on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Today I'll be talking to C.J. Genevieve, author of No Place Like Home, Lessons in Activism from LGBT Kansas. C.J. is a writer, radio reporter, and editor. She currently works at KCUR 89.3 FM and formerly was the editor of The Pitch Kansas City and director of communications at the University of Kansas Medical Center. Her book, No Place Like Home, came out last year and won the 2019 Stedman Deck Great Plains Distinguished Book Prize. And there are plans for production of the book into a documentary by Kevin Wilmont, who did Black Klansman with Spike Lee and Sam Zeff of KCUR. Hi, CJ. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
I understand that you worked on this book for years, interviewing many activists. Why did you choose this topic, and what was your goal?
Wow. I guess I had lots of goals. When I was working at The Pitch, like around 2004, 2005, all across the country, there were these statewide efforts in lots of states to ban gay marriage. Around 2013, 2014, 2015, things had totally changed, and the Supreme Court was about to legalize gay marriage. And so there was this decade where things had totally turned around, and I thought that change in society was really interesting. I had been really hurt as a gay person in 2004 when Missouri passed that statewide amendment, and then in 2005 when Kansas did. That was very, very painful as a citizen, someone who grew up in this region of the country. I was very sad when 70% of the voters passed those marriage amendments, and so I kind of wanted to go back and find what had happened to the people who tried to stop that from happening a decade earlier. And then when I found some people and they started telling me their stories, I thought there was a book. And so I just kept talking to more and more people, and eventually there was a book.
I noticed that nearly all of the activists you interviewed for the book had suffered from some sort of discrimination due to their sexual orientation or gender identity, or saw loved ones go through that, and that this is what motivated them to become politically involved. Could you describe some of that?
And so 2011, 2012, in Salina, Hutchinson, and Manhattan, folks went to City Hall and asked if the city commissions would add sexual orientation and gender identity to the non-discrimination ordinances to prevent discrimination. Your access to public places, public accommodations, housing, and employment. The folks in those towns end up losing, basically, in those efforts. They sometimes end up getting put to a vote by the people of the town, and they get rejected, so that's hard. But what I write about is how those efforts to get your rights, even though you might not win at the ballot box in those towns, the effort itself educates people, and you make friends in the course of talking to your neighbors and having stories written about you in the paper and going to town hall debates. You tell your stories, and suddenly a whole bunch of people are thinking about things they never thought about before. You're educating folks, and a lot of people kind of come out of the woodwork, and so there's this whole community created. And so I have a guy saying, you know, it's the best time to be gay in Salina. Even though they didn't win their rights, they created this community, and there was the first Pride celebration in Salina. And then I interviewed some trans folks who were living very publicly and fighting for equality also.
Yeah, and so all of them had been through something, but I think they found healing through forming a community with other people who had been through similar things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for someone in a big city, they maybe didn't need that as much, but for some of the smaller rural areas, that became their social hub.
Right, right.
And so that's how they got their social activities, their emotional support, and all kinds of other things that they wouldn't have had if they hadn't been gathering together to try and fight this. And that's what really struck me about the book, that you can have the positivity even while you're in the middle of fighting for something. It's almost like the journey is more important than the destination sometimes.
I think that's really true, and I think that a lot of people, they had more friends than they thought in a lot of places. And once they sort of became more public with their efforts, they realized that maybe more people cared and were for their cause than were against them.
Yeah. But they did have some really interesting obstacles, like some politicians that said, oh, yeah, we're in support of what you're doing, and then they turn around and vote the other way or come up with some very strange arguments that don't really make any sense to just sort of distract everyone from the true issue, like the transgender bathroom thing.
Yeah, one of the things that has always sort of fascinated me about political rhetoric of all kinds in this country is just the way that some non-issue can be turned into some huge controversy. And you really saw that happening with the whole gay marriage thing in the mid-2000s. It was an effort to get conservative voters out to help re-elect George W. Bush. You know, there was this threat of gay marriage. And then the transgender bathroom bills that are in state legislatures, most people aren't going to know if they're in a bathroom with a trans person, and it doesn't matter. There's nothing to be scared of, but that rhetoric gets used to inflame folks. And one of the things that I was most interested in is state-level politics, so how these arguments play out in a state capital. And I think a lot of people don't realize that that's kind of where the action is politically. You know, people get interested in presidential elections, but your state house is where people make the most decisions that really affect you directly. And so I tried to really humanize a lot of that action in the state house in Topeka and show how the sausage is made a little bit so that people could get their heads around that kind of politics.
I think what was fascinating to me was the fact that they could go and get an ordinance made to protect them, and then within a couple of months it could be rescinded by vote. It's like you couldn't just rest on your laurels and be like, oh, we did that, everything's great. No, there's somebody still coming out of the woodwork trying to change it back.
Well, I think we're seeing this on all sorts of levels right now. I mean, politics swings back and forth. In Manhattan, the activists went to the city commission and they added sexual orientation and gender identity to the city ordinance. So victory, victory, we've got it in the ordinance. The ordinance will go into effect on April 15th or something like that. I'm making that up because I don't remember the exact dates. But right before that, there's a whole new election, and so a new city commission comes into place. Their first order of business is to rescind that ordinance so it never goes into effect.
And I know that had to be heartbreaking. At the time your book came out, there were only 3 cities in Kansas that had protection for gender identity and for sexual orientation. And now there have been a number of cities since then that have had that protection, right?
Yeah, so at the time when I was finishing the book, the cities were Lawrence, Manhattan, and Roland Park, which passed its ordinance in 2014. And as of a year ago, a bunch of municipalities in the Kansas City metro have passed these. So Wyandotte County, Prairie Village, Mission, Merriam, and Westwood Hills. Oh, Mission Woods also is another one. It's turned out to be more of a controversial question for Olathe. And also Overland Park has tabled any action. So I know that the folks who are working on that are disappointed.
Well, I know you had commented in your book that some people in the LGBT community weren't really caring about marriage rights because they were thinking that it was more fundamental to have a job and so on and so forth. And they thought that those rights should come first, not the marriage thing.
For me, it was not an issue that I would have picked. And a lot of the activists that I wrote about felt the same way. If people want to get married, that's fine, but I just want to be able to not get fired or not get beat up or not get kicked out of my apartment.
So it's just kind of strange and ironic that that ended up being the first issue. But, I mean, do you think that the fact that we did get the marriage rights, that that suddenly legitimized things so that it helped you get the rest of the rights faster?
I think that 10-year discussion really about marriage equality opened a lot of people's eyes. It's kind of funny because when it was first an issue, I wrote a column in the pitch. I wrote, gay marriage is the dumbest idea I've ever heard. It's an institution that fails half the time for straight people. Can't we do better? Why do we want to get married?
Yeah.
And many of my fellow LGBTQ citizens were furious with me for saying that. And why I said it at the time was just because I was angry that it was being used as a political weapon against us. And I knew, I was certain we were going to lose. We were losing everywhere by margins of 70%. And then what happened, though, once this sort of became the focus of the gay rights movement, wasn't everybody's priority, but that sort of campaign, Love is Love, mm-hmm. really, I think, helped a lot of Americans rethink their feelings about gay people. And all the same-sex couples who wanted to get married and talked about their relationships, and you saw people who had been together forever, and, you know, adorable elderly couples who'd been together for 50 years or something.
Yeah.
And a lot of people could relate, and I think it did help open a lot of minds.
Yeah, and just marriage in itself does give you rights as far as your tax purposes and as far as your benefits if one partner dies and things like that.
Absolutely.
So it's very important in that sense, or even just for custody of your children.
Sure. And there are people that I write about in the book who had that exact same experience of being with a partner for a long time, having to adopt the child that they had already raised as a parent. So yeah, marriage does have its upside, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I would say. I did end up doing it a few years ago myself.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can be a really important milestone in a relationship and everything. But the weird thing, too, is I even had a friend who, she had gotten married in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was trying to get a divorce, but was having trouble getting a divorce because the marriage wasn't recognized.
Right.
In the state she was in.
Yeah, I mean, that was, for a while, the legal landscape of the United States was just so uneven that way. If you lived in Kansas, you could go to Iowa, you could get legally married, but as soon as you crossed the state line, you wouldn't be married anymore. And that was one of the things I wanted to really explore in the book.
Yeah, especially Governor Sam Brownback really did a lot of things to try and get in the way of those rights.
There was several months long last-ditch effort to sort of die on every hill before allowing full marriage equality in Kansas.
Yeah, for sure. It wasn't an easy fight. I felt like I learned a lot about activism in general in the book. Like, one of the reasons that people were caught off guard by the state just suddenly declaring that gay marriage was against the law is that they were all working on just getting rights in their own hometowns. And then only after the marriage thing happened statewide that they start getting with their allies and forming a bigger group that had more power.
It's an interesting contrast because it's there in your own community where you can make the most difference with your neighbors and your coworkers and your family members. But then when there's a statewide ballot question and you have to fight at a state level, these folks really found that they needed a statewide network, and it did not exist when they were first confronted with that question. After they lost really badly at the ballot box, they decided, you know, this hurts too much to ever let it happen again, and so let's build a statewide network. And that's happened, but it also ends up being pretty fragile. You end up in a town like Salina or Hutchinson where there's really only a couple people doing all the work, you know, and you can have a chapter of an organization, but it's really two people or four people doing it year after year. And that's what's one of the things that's the most fascinating and also sort of just troubling, I guess, is how few people are really involved in the kind of change that they're making, and they could really use a lot of help.
Yeah, so maybe there's a lot of people that want to show up for a meeting and do a potluck, but not as many want to roll up their sleeves and do the work, you know, and not because they don't care, but because they're busy with their lives and different things going on.
I think people have different levels of comfort with activism, and people a lot of times don't think there is anything they can do. And I think one of the themes from the book is there are a lot of different things you can do. You probably have skills you don't even know you have. And it's just a matter of finding who needs help and contributing whatever help you can give. I mean, there's activists in the book who sort of have these big egos, and they want to be on TV, and they want to be given speeches on the State House steps. And then there's other folks who just want to bake cookies. There are folks who say that their brand of activism is being normal, just like, you know, being two women who are married, and they keep up their home, and they maintain their vehicles, and they take care of their property, so everybody knows that they're just, like, normal people. They're not, you know, flying a rainbow flag, but they're not in the closet either.
Yeah, so their form of activism is to just set the example.
Right. There's certainly, I would say, a spectrum or a continuum of folks, you know, who do just want to be, quote, normal, but then there's others who want to be visibly queer. There's no reason that person shouldn't have full equality in society as well.
Yeah, there's a variety of different ways to express yourself and
right.
live your lifestyle. I think one of the things that struck me was also the idea that the marriage amendment opened up the chance to have a dialogue. Like you said, Allie Stoughton of Manhattan did a tremendous amount of canvassing, talking to complete strangers, trying to educate them in the mid-2000s to fight the same-sex marriage amendment. And she said that the amendment was kind of a gift. Otherwise, quote, there's no way we could have gone around and talked to strangers about their attitudes toward gay or queer people. You just don't show up for no reason, but we had a reason.
Right, I love that quote. I mean, she's talking about, you know, again, all the hard work that she did and that her peers and allies did in Manhattan to try to stop the marriage amendment from passing, but it passed. But then, you know, all these years later, she's looking at it as a gift because she was able to knock on strangers' doors and have a talk about, you know, life with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is something that people weren't talking about. And I think once people talk about it, then that's going to help them to come around and see that this isn't really as weird as it seems to be.
Right. She tells a great story about having a conversation with a woman who identifies herself as very conservative, and they have whatever talk they have, and Allie leaves, and after the vote, Allie runs into the same woman at a fast food store, and the woman says, you know, I couldn't vote against the marriage amendment, but I didn't vote for it either. I just didn't vote because of our conversation. And
yeah,
it's a small victory.
Yeah, that is. Just like when Scott Grabeel, gay man in Salina, said that repeal of the short-lived non-discrimination ordinance in Salina by just 54 to 46 brought the community together for its first gay pride event and helped people connect in a way they would not have if they had simply won. And the fact that they say came so close to winning was a victory.
Yeah, and that's what I was sort of trying to get at earlier, is that that whole effort built a community. They had their first pride, and they expected maybe 200 people, and 500 people showed up.
Yeah, and that's huge for a small town like that.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important that they were doing all these fun activities and things, like I said, to form the community. That's what I just really loved about your book, because it just showed that, like I said, the journey is sometimes more important than destination. You may not get quite where you thought you were going to get, but in the process, along the way, you just meet all these cool people and do all these cool things, and everyone is fulfilled from the chance to do something and to have a sense of purpose and to have that togetherness.
I'm really glad that came through, because I feel like most of the people I wrote about, I didn't know before I started writing this book. And I reached out to complete strangers and asked them to tell me their life story, basically. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were talking about experiences that had been very painful at the time. And so a lot of these folks were not eager to relive those days, but they also knew that what they had been through could help other people, and that it was important that their experiences be documented for historical purposes, if nothing else. And so when folks shared these stories with me, not only was I very moved by the experiences of the people who I was writing about, but I also felt a real responsibility to get their stories right and to make those stories as compelling as they had been and as human as they had been when people were talking to me, so that readers would hopefully feel the same sense of love, really, for this, for the state of Kansas, mm-hmm. which is, you know, home for folks. And it could be a similar kind of feeling of people in any state have for their home. But, you know, these people stayed. They didn't leave. They didn't go somewhere else. They wanted to make their own hometown or farm or city or whatever the better place.
Yeah. Yeah, so even if it wasn't perfect, it was still where they felt they belonged.
You stay in a place for a lot of reasons. What your comfort level as a queer person in Kansas might, is maybe not the only thing that you're thinking about why you want to live there. Maybe you have family. Maybe, like a lot of these folks, they just love the landscape. They love being on the prairie. They don't feel at home anywhere else. So there's a lot of reasons that that people do have to stay and make it a better place.
Yeah, for sure. And I felt like when I was reading the book that you described all of these people so well that I was really struck by their stories, but also by their strength and the way that they were fighting back and everything. And I really felt like I could understand where they were coming from. And it was very touching.
That's very gratifying to hear. I think a lot of these people, one of the guys said to me, you know, we're just ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And what I noticed was a lot of people didn't set out to be activists. They just saw something that needed to be done, so they did it.
Yeah. They just realized that they could do it, and nobody else was there doing it, so it's like, well, I guess it might as well be me. And I think they kind of amazed themselves.
I think that's true. Yeah.
So what do you see the future of this cause going to? What else is still left to fight for, and how do you think it's going to progress?
Well, I think it's going to be back and forth. I finished the main reporting and writing for the book in 2016, and we know what happened in the fall of 2016, and mm-hmm. we know that the current presidential administration has rolled back a lot of the gains, particularly for transgender people. At the end of my book, transgender people are being welcomed into the military, and the current administration has since rescinded that. And there are lots of other efforts to roll back the gains that we've made. At the same time, Kansas elected an open lesbian to Congress and sent two gay people to represent districts of Johnson County at the Kansas State House. So what we're seeing, I think, is a really newly energized and educated the people, the voters, the citizens, the grassroots. I think a lot of people woke up and became more active and asked what they could do. And we're seeing that in a place like Kansas. We're seeing people realize that this is hard work and you can't take anything for granted and you have to keep staying vigilant and staying involved. And certainly in my book, there's a heavy emphasis on the electoral process mm-hmm. to get those victories. That's one way to make progress in society. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the legal system, and I think we're seeing some real doubt about how friendly the legal system will be to our causes in the mm-hmm. decades ahead. There's also just public opinion and one-to-one conversation, and I think all of those methods are ways that people need to keep working.
Yeah. And like people say, it ain't over till it's over, but this is the kind of thing that just isn't really over.
It's never going to be over.
Yeah, because you gain something and then you lose something and you just keep going and riding the wave and hope that it's going to end up moving up.
Right, right.
Yeah. But it's going to be stopping and starting and faltering.
Right.
So it's a messy process.
And I think life is pretty messy.
Yeah, probably. So I have a couple final questions.
Okay.
The first one is, when are we going to be able to see the documentary that's based on your book?
That's a really good question. writing books takes a really long time, and making movies takes a really long time. Mm-hmm. So I think best case scenario, early 2020. But we have a lot of filming left to do, and we have a lot of money to raise still to get all of that done. Unlike writing a book, which I can pretty much do by myself, there's a whole crew and lots of time and equipment that I don't control in that process.
Yeah, but it's going to be exciting when it comes out.
I think it's going to be really beautiful. The trailer is up. If people are interested and want to see it, you can go to cjjanovy.com/movie. And I'm amazed at how moving it is, even when I see it still.
I'll have to take a look at that. I haven't seen that yet. Is there anything else you want the audience to know about your book, the movie, or the LGBT movement in Kansas?
I'm really gratified and happy that people are reading the book, and I've had a lot of positive response to the book. I've had a lot of people thanking me for telling the stories, and so it's just so great that the stories of the people in the book are getting out there. I'm really glad about that. And one thing I always say at book talks is that there were three main themes that sort of came through about activism. You know, the subtitle of the book is Lessons in Activism, and the first lesson was always prepare to lose. Like we've been talking about, you can, you know, you keep trying, a lot of times you lose, but if you keep trying enough, you can find these other wins. And so just be ready to lose, number one. Number two is to be gentle with your allies. There are points in the book where there's sort of in-group fighting that ends up causing more pain, and I think that it's really easy for efforts to sort of disintegrate or dissolve because personalities, people can't get along, or someone accidentally offends someone or something like that. And so the lesson is really to just be gentle with the people who are trying to help the cause. Keep the focus on where you really need to go instead of whatever little disagreements you're having. And the third lesson was really just to do something. And we talked about it earlier, the people who want to be out in public and want to be in front of the TV cameras. Every movement needs those folks, but every movement also needs the people who just bake the cookies and write anonymous checks and send anonymous cards and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the people that are the wind beneath the wings kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that's really insightful. I'm sorry, but that's all the time we have. Thank you, CJ, for talking with me today. On the KKFI website under Radioactive, you can look up a description of today's show, along with information about CJ's book, No Place Like Home, Lessons in Activists in LGBT Kansas. You can also listen to today's show again and get information about upcoming shows. This is Lynn Marie Norris with Radioactive Magazine on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.